At Places Please is a slice of life podcast focusing on leadership, transferable skills, folks in the production world, and how they got there. My guest today is Brian Bradford. Brian is a playwright and director. He also spent a good deal of time working as both a substitute stage manager and doing takeovers, and is here today to discuss those roles and what it takes with me. Hi, Brian Bradford.
Hi.
Thank you for making time.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, I am just going to talk about a few things, but I wanted to jump off a little bit. The way we know one another is obviously working in theater, and we've both gone on a number of paths and journeys. And when you've come to my class and talked, one of the main things that you've covered is being a takeover stage manager. So I was wondering if, I know that's a little bit later in your professional timeline, but if we could start there in terms of what that means, what that title means, and how you got into it.
Sure. So a takeover stage manager is in this particular world, in this setup at Zach, and what their needs are, they have a resident stage manager that puts shows into rehearsal, and then we'll get them through like first week of opening. And at that point, they're already starting prep and rehearsals for the next show. And so they need somebody to come in and take over running the show. And that includes calling the show, setting any additional rehearsals, any put-ins, anything like that that needs to happen from that point on. And in this scenario, those takeovers can last 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, depending on how long the run is, but it's typically around the 3 week period. So there's a lot to learn very quickly about a show when you're coming in to take over. As when you're putting up a show, you have the luxury of knowing all the ins and outs from day one of rehearsal, and also from pre-production, everything you've learned about the show, as well as getting to know the personalities and the actors and earning their trust. And so when I come in to take over, it's you're walking into a new family, and you may not know the show at all. There have been times where I've come in and have not known a thing about the show other than seeing like a performance before I go into it. And so I'm constantly playing catch up, and watching and learning and just absorbing everything I can, about that. And so the first week is, watching the call and shadowing the stage manager, the PSM. And again, it's really standing back, and just taking in as much as you can, and starting to establish relationships with the actors and the crew members and everybody behind the scenes. So when the time comes that their mother or their father, who they've spent all these weeks in rehearsal with, leaves, that you have some sort of rapport and trust built up with the cast and crew. It's not immediate. And so this is the thing you had mentioned that we talked about before, is it can't be seen as I'm going to come in and I'm going to take over this show and I'm going to tell these people what to do and they better listen to me. And it's not like that. It's really a tightrope between being humble in knowing that you don't know everything about a show or the people involved, but also relying on your expertise in that field to help guide you. So knowing the rules, knowing the equity stage management rules, knowing safety rules, knowing different things like that. So if you see some sort of thing that doesn't look right, to have the confidence to approach a crew member or an actor very gently and say, hey, I'm not, should you be standing there at this particular moment because, a piece of scenery is flying in or whatever that may be, but approaching it in such a way that it feels like I'm just concerned for your safety, or I don't know, instead of laying down the law and just sort of barking out orders to people. And in that way, you earn trust throughout. And when you get in a bind, especially with crew members, crew members save my life so many times on a show, especially when you don't know the show. So instead of coming in and saying, well, the script says this, the block or the blocking and the call script says this, so this is what we're going to do. If I run into a situation in a show, and it's happened many times, where something has gone wrong on stage, and because I'm not as familiar with the show, I totally ask crew and people involved, what should I do here? I don't know. What has this situation happened before? And how has the stage manager or crew, everybody involved, rectified it? And so you do have to be a lot of humility and just saying, I don't know, somebody please help me out. And if you've built up that trust with cast and crew along the way, they will be more than willing to get you out of a hot spot to help the show. And if just the opposite, if you come in guns a-blazing, and trying to be the authoritarian and we're going to do things my way because now it's my show, you're not going to get a lot of help when you need it, and that's important. But anyway, that said, we come in, you learn the show, you learn the call, and there'll be a few days at the end where the PSM will shadow you and watch you make the call, and where you can ask questions, and then you're on your own for the next 3 weeks and figuring things out. And I will still, luckily we have a good support system, and I will still call and rely on the previous stage manager for things that come up that I'm not exactly sure how to handle, or talking about personalities that I need to be watchful of and stuff. So it's an interesting gig, and very different from putting up a show from start to finish.
Yeah, I having done takeovers as well, the day that it's time for the stage manager who teched and opened it to watch you, and in the presence of that and them and their materials and the notes you've made, that is my least favorite part and favorite part in equal amounts, because it's that sort of, it feels like someone's watching you drive their car or dress their kid. Yes. But I also enjoy the social experiment of watching them watch you and want to act, but they have to be patient humans. So it's an interesting act. From the people skills point of view, it's interesting. You and I share a similar value system around joining a group of people. And it's interesting that you talked about sort of the power of saying, I don't know, because some people believe that actually chips away at your credibility. I don't feel that way. How do you feel about that?
I feel completely the opposite. Even in, not just in this professional setting, but if I meet somebody, I'm getting to know somebody new, and they reveal an insecurity about themselves, it makes me love them even more, because they're willing to be vulnerable, and say, I would much prefer that than going into a situation where I'm in the theater where I'm pretending to know everything, because we all know those people who have an answer for everything. They even when they don't, or they'll pretend they do, which in some cases you know, it's a balancing act. But for the most part, it endears me to people for someone to say, I don't know, but hey, let me find out for you, you know, or we'll figure this out. But, or can you help me figure this out? It just endears me to people more, and I don't feel like it diminishes their authority at all.
Agreed. And I'm a fan of also making sure, I love it when I'm very clear that person who is saying, I don't know, is also letting me know, I'm not afraid to make a decision. I'm not afraid to tell you no. I just need more information because in this moment, I don't know 100%, but I do know 87, and I will tell you no if I need to. And I appreciate that as well. I'm going to turn right on this farm road for 2 seconds, okay. Because something else that you've done is, it's called either a sub stage manager or a substitute stage manager. How is that different in both job description and how that job title appears on a contract?
That's a good question. So it is different in that. So in New York, this happens more in New York, on a regular basis than in smaller regional theaters, because the runs in regional theaters are much shorter. And when you have an open-ended run on shows in New York, there is a need right at the beginning, when a show opens, for the PSM to start hiring sub stage managers. And there could be multiple reasons why. So stage managers can go take leaves and go on vacation just like the actors can. Stage managers get sick just like actors do and need to call out of a show. They may have special rehearsals that require an additional person at some point. So in those cases, I made a good living as a substitute stage manager on several different shows at the same time, because different shows would have different needs. And so I would work on one show one night, and then the stage manager would call me, see if I was available the next night on a different show. And so in those situations, it's even less like a takeover stage manager, in that you don't have the luxury, depending on how often you come in, you don't have the luxury of building a whole lot of relationships quickly with people. I mean, you do have to earn their trust, but it's more, I'm coming into this situation, I need to know my job, and it's less about becoming, I don't know, buddy-buddy with people, and more just, I need to know my job, I need to know what it is to make everybody safe, primarily, and then depending on how long you sub in and out of a show, then you start building those relationships. But in a situation like that, it's even more important to defer to the people that have been there longer, to know safety and know what the job is. Also, you're just taking usually little bits of a show, whereas as a takeover stage manager, as a PSM, you're learning the entire show. You're learning the call for the whole show. You're learning the flow of the whole show. As a sub stage manager, you may come in and for the first act be tasked with, your track only has three things you need to do, but they happen at different points within the act. So trying to find some sort of continuity mentally within the show, especially if you're not familiar with it, can be really challenging. So you don't have the luxury of saying, oh, after she sings this big number, then I don't know, then the story goes into this direction and now I know that I'm doing this. It's not. It's on this particular cue. You better know in your head you need to step out of the way so you don't get run over by a big piece of scenery. And at the same time, you need to be watching three other things to make sure actors get on stage safely or this cue is executed properly. So it's a bit more of a puzzle piece that you're just fitting right into a slot. And it can be more challenging, I find, than doing a whole takeover situation. But it's also about building trust and stepping into, in those situations, you're certainly not the boss. And so you have to be able to navigate personalities quickly and see who's going to be the grumpy person that you need to charm the pants off to get their help even more, you know, or whatever it is. But it can be a challenging situation, but also very rewarding. You're not stuck into I'm on an 8-show-a-week contract. So you get in, you do your job, you know, it could be a 4-hour job that night. You get in, you get out, and you're done. And so you don't build those relationships, like I said before. So I really enjoyed that piece of it, because I didn't like being stuck in an 8-show-a-week contract, and that involves rehearsals and put-ins and everything else that goes with it. So it's not just the shows at night. It's a lot of times full days of rehearsals and shows and paperwork and et cetera.
Is the prep similar though? Whether you're doing a takeover, you're coming in as a sub. I mean, is it the same idea where I'm going to learn your track, you watch me do your track, or is the timeline a bit more abbreviated?
It's a lot more abbreviated. You usually have, depending on the complexity of the show and the complexity of the track, you maybe have 3 days, 3 or 4 days to shadow. And that's if you're not learning the call. As a sub, I would also call the show. But that was over a long period of time of them getting to know me and trusting that I knew what I was doing before I would learn a call and get to that point. But for just a deck track stage manager, it was maybe 3 days of shadowing. And the first two was watching and observing and being a shadow, literally, to the stage manager. And then the third day was you running the track with the SM following you through it all. And you have a deck track sheet, right? And with highlights of things you need to know. And even then, I oftentimes would run into the stage manager handing me these run sheets and highlighting everything that I needed to do. And typically, out of everything that was highlighted on a page, there were one or two things, my question that I would always come in and ask, because I can't learn all the details that somebody in their position, having gone through it all, would know. So what I would normally ask is, what absolutely do I need to know at this point to make sure nobody gets killed? You know, including myself, making sure I'm standing in the right place. But I'm not going to, unless I'm running the show frequently, I'm not going to know that I need to keep a side eye out to make sure that this actor is completely changed. Like, that's something I need to be aware of. But at that particular point, that's got to be the dresser's job and the actor's job to know that there is a sub on tonight. And I'm not going to know all the details to make sure you get your ass on stage in the right amount of time. I'm worried about the scenery that needs to go out. That's the important thing. So there's a lot of extraneous, sometimes stuff. So I would always focus in and ask the stage manager, like, what is absolutely critical at this point? And everybody on crew and set or stage managers know that you're a sub. And so everybody who's been with the show for a long time also has an eye out for you to make sure that you're doing the right thing and you're in the right place and this is going to get executed properly. So there is some support and you're not completely on your own, and that's where it comes in. Don't alienate, don't piss people off. Otherwise, you know, you may get thrown under the bus, sometimes literally.
Well, and that's funny that you said that, because I was doing a sub track one time on deck, and I had a similar experience where things were sort of pre-highlighted, which was helpful, but it is that, I love the way you just described that, of sort of the difference between the brass tacks and the courtesy stuff, or the love is in the details stuff. where there was this journey of the cough drop, and I kept thinking, because there were so many notes about it, that it was a prop. And finally I was just like, It seems that this cough drop has its own track, but it is important. You do have to sort of crystallize and find the nuggets, if that's what I'm hearing you describe.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because there's so many things that we do that's not necessarily part of our track, that we've adopted and highlighted, and we'll have a relationship with an actor that the actor, it's not specific, but the actor just likes their cough drop in a particular place. And, you know, and most of the time, you'll get a lot of leniency from the actor if they know you're a sub and you're just trying to figure out everything else. And if their cough drop isn't there, you know, depending on the actor, you'll get a pass.
Here's your cough drop coupon. In the big ticket world, and talking about this stage management generally, how has being a stage manager taught you how to problem solve?
Well, that's a good question. I was interviewing for a stage management job, but the interview was being conducted by somebody who wasn't really in the world. It was more like an HR position type situation. And it was for theater, but it was more sort of corporate type thing. And they asked me the standard interview question that I don't feel like should be asked of stage managers. Maybe in the corporate world, it's fine. But she asked me, she said, can you think, tell me about something that went wrong and how you solved it? And my response to her was, I was like, that happens every day. So I sort of jokingly said, I said, it would actually be, something would stick out more in my mind if you asked me, tell me about a day that you had planned out and went exactly as, because that would stick out. That's more rare than having a problem that comes up. That's just the job. And you have to think on your feet because things don't stop for you. You have to be in a creative thought mindset. And you also have to be very good at collaborating. This goes back to the not knowing, right? So when a director turns to you and says, I need an XYZ prop, then you turn to your team and say, how can we make this happen? It's not, I have to come up with all the ideas. You have to be in a collaborative mindset, but you also have to learn to think fast on your feet. And I think that's just, your mind may be set up for that before you come into the stage management world, and in which case that's beautiful and that's going to help you out. And if it's not, it's something you learn very quickly, and you start picking up tips and tricks the more you do it, you know, about turning this particular thing into this particular prop. I did that on three shows ago. Here, this is easy. Let's do it. And if not, then you get very crafty. And it's the thing with stage management. What I've learned is me in particular, I like knowing everything about a job. I like to know exactly what I'm doing. I don't want to mess up. I don't want to disappoint anybody. I'm a perfectionist in that way. And so I want to know everything. And the thing about stage management is you don't know until you do it. And you don't know until you've fucked it up about how to do it right. So I look back now on shows that I've done and almost cringe thinking about the way I handled something or the way I went about solving a particular issue. And I think, gosh, they must have thought I was a complete idiot. Like, how could I mess that up? And now I know better, but it's you can't know everything. And a lot of times it's the things you didn't know that you didn't know that come up, and you just have to roll with it and deal with it and be human about it and be humble and be collaborative. And then you figure it all out. you know, eventually. And even still, I'm not in the stage management world anymore, but those things that I learned as a stage manager definitely helped. My brain is already primed to figure out and solve issues right away.
I love that. Yeah, great advice that I got, and what I tried to practice is that having a level of accountability and not being, we do beat ourselves up in the car, the drive home, the red light cringe moment of like, shit, you know, while you're paused for a second. But also, you know, being flexible enough that someone can speak to you directly, give you a note, and then recover, and don't passive aggressively deliver results. It's hard. Mm-hmm. It's hard. You mentioned that you're no longer working as a stage manager, and you have a variety of skills. What are you focusing on right now?
I'm focusing on making money.
Great.
So I transitioned out of stage management into directing, which is a very natural transition. There's a lot of stage managers who become directors, and a lot who continue to do both. So I had transitioned into directing, and I moved from New York back to Austin a few years ago. Directing is something that relies, just like acting or stage manager, it relies on other people to hire you to do things. And so I would work a little bit here and there, but it was not enough to sustain. I could do that. I could direct small things in New York because I had my income from stage management, from my subbing jobs, which was good. But then moving here to Austin, while there's a great theater scene, it's not as large. So I'm in a smaller market, and I don't have enough work to keep me going. So that's where I would do takeover stage management gigs, and I would do, you know, one-off little gigs here and there. And then directing as well, but nothing was ever adding up financially for me. And so I'm at the point in my life where there was an opportunity to get into real estate, and my partner does real estate appraisal, and it can be a challenging field to get into, but very very lucrative. And so though it's not a passion, it can be interesting work. And what I like about it fits in with I'm not a 9-to-5-er, and a lot of creative people are not. So this job it's freelance, but it allows me to work from home. It's good money. I can work as much or as little as I want. And so because of these things, it fits in well with sort of my whole personality. But I'm focused right now on, I'm apprenticing right now. I will be licensed hopefully by middle of the year. And it's been a process. It's been a year and a half long process to get all this done. But hopefully my goal is to set myself up financially to then be able to get back to my creative side. I do miss it. I miss my crazy, wacky theater friends and personalities. And so I eventually want to get back to that. I also enjoy writing, directing. Aside to the business that I've never explored, which I've been wanting to explore, is film. And seeing how my skills as a stage manager and as a director and writing and all that fit into the film world. And so coming up here soon, I hope to be taking some film classes. So just expanding my skill set and what I can. And also still at this point in my life, I thought I had figured out exactly what my passion and what I love to do. And what I'm finding is that it's still evolving. And I don't think that's ever going to be a set in stone static. I've found my place in life. I'm done looking, I'm done exploring. So that's comforting and frightening all at the same time. I thought once I found directing, which I absolutely love, and it fits in really well with everything that I've learned over the years and stuff. And then you get to a point where you're like, well, as much as you love directing, there's just not enough of it to go around. Mm-hmm. Right. And so it's becoming about creating your own projects, creating, you know, finding your own creativity that doesn't rely on multiple other people and somebody to hire you. And so it's all a journey.
I think it's an important one to talk about. I mean, I don't know that it's talked about enough, the sort of notion of transferable skills and how do we take our natural gifts, our learned gifts, I can't seem to say that, and highlight them and apply. I mean, I love that. I love that it's, you view it through the sort of lens of evolve. I think that's important. I love that. Mm-hmm. I was curious listening to you, wearing the number of hats that you've worn and let's say as a director and a stage manager, is it hard, easy, fun to sit then in an audience? What's it like to be an audience member having a frame of reference that maybe the person sitting next to you doesn't have?
It's kind of hard to, it's like once you, the magician knows the magic, sometimes the magic of a show and just getting lost in the story can be taken away, because you're noticing light cues, you're noticing a dropped line, you're noticing, you know, if some big magic reveal happens, you know exactly how that, all the people running around backstage like crazy to make that happen, this beautiful moment happen on stage. So it's a bit difficult. I can appreciate a big moment like that. Not necessarily from a storytelling point of view, but from a technical point of view, to know everything, all the collaboration that had to happen to make this beautiful moment. So I appreciate it from that side. I do appreciate too when I see a particular show and I can get lost in the story, right? Because the director has done a beautiful job, the designers have done a beautiful job at not making the direction or the technical aspects overshadow the story. So they all of these things support the story in such a way that they don't distract from it, and I can get lost in just the story of it. But it's difficult sometimes, but not in a bad way. I appreciate knowing what I know, because then I take all of that information and I can use it to create something that a regular audience member can get lost in.
I love that. Yeah, there's nothing like it for me sitting in an audience, sitting as an audience member and experiencing a transition that makes me super happy. It's ridiculously satisfying.
Yes.
I think also sometimes too, I had a friend actually who had done just a touch of working in theater as a dresser, but talked about the relationship of being an audience member and having a larger appreciation and understanding of the ticket price. And I was like, wow, that's a great way to look at it, of like, yeah, this is what it takes, and the sheer volume of humans behind the scenes making it happen was of significance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's what you learn that as a stage manager, you know, all the bits and pieces, everybody involved to make something like that happen. So I can't say as a director, I want to run this particular scene again, and I want to do it now. I want to do it in 3 minutes. You can't do that if you know this particular set piece has to be taken off stage. We need to reset this. We need to bring this other thing in. These costumes have to be changed out. You know that could be a 20, 30 minute affair, and you can't bark at anybody. You can't get mad. You can't throw your foot down, you know? So it's, I think it's so important and helpful to know what everybody does to make the show happen.
I think you might have just also named your book of short stories a 20, 30 minute affair. That might have to live in your life. Do you you, in thinking about creative team members that you've worked with, and it could be, you know, in any role, are there folks that you have worked with in a leadership position that you have said, oh, that's a behavior I want to hold on to. That's an approach I want to hold on to. I admire the way that person tackled that.
Yeah, definitely. One that comes to mind is a director that I worked with. What I loved about his approach was that he set a great tone for the room in general, for the actors, for the stage managers, for everybody involved, in that it was going to be a collaborative event. And what he said was, if we are working on something and we're trying to figure out a creative piece of it, he said, best idea wins. And I thought, what a, like, it's sort of the thing we were talking about earlier about did that diminish his authority as a director? Did anybody look at him and go, oh, geez, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. He's just going to sponge off everybody else's ideas. And it was just the opposite. Everybody, just by saying that, everybody realized this was a person who knew this was a collaborative process and understood that, and that the best idea could come from an actor, it could come from a PA, but that he didn't necessarily think he was the smartest person in the room, which was such a refreshing thing to witness and watch. And it's something that I always bring into any situation. And same goes for a stage manager. You know, the PSM could say the same thing. If you hire a team around you that you know are smart and quick and have great ideas, you don't have to have all the answers. You know, you can rely on other people. You know, and I watched a lead actor who was in a very difficult role, who out of everybody could have complained and been a very big diva about it. And there were other people that you could watch that started to pull diva behavior, but because this lead actor was doing the exact same thing as the others were and wasn't complaining about it, and was stayed light and stayed open and worked very hard, I loved watching everybody watch him, and nobody would complain about anything, because they knew if anybody had the right to, it was him. And if he wasn't doing it, then we need to keep our mouth closed. And again, it was something like that. Just watch. He didn't have to say anything. He didn't have to do anything or demand, or he just had to set an example.
Yeah, I agreed. And that notion, I'm a fan of when I see someone who is behaving in a way that challenges our view of that hierarchy, I'm saying in quotes, because it is, and more often than not, it's an all hands on deck approach. We have our job title so that we all tackle it collectively. But yeah, I love that, Brian. Random question for you. You ready? Sure. Have you had enough coffee? Have you had enough Kona?
Yes.
Okay. In front of you, there's a cotton ball, a cloth napkin, and a square of tin foil. Which one would you agree to chew on for 7 minutes?
Wow. Where do you get these questions? I'm going to have to say, I'll take the cotton ball, Bob.
Really? Okay, excellent. For 7 minutes. Okay.
For 7 minutes. Yes, and then excellent. I can swallow it, and it'll make me feel full.
Excellent. What show would you love to direct?
Oh, gosh. I want to direct new works. Mm. I'm very interested in shaping and guiding along new works. So while it would be fun to direct something, to take a new spin on, you know, some classic, and I'm sure there's some out there that I would really like to direct if I could think of any. But yeah, I'm really interested in new stuff, creating new stuff.
Excellent. Do you miss New York as a resident?
I'm I miss my friends up there.
Mm-hmm.
And occasionally I do miss the city, but for the most part, I don't. It was a lot of fun. I'm glad I had that experience, but I don't really miss it.
I think
maybe it's just at this point in my life, mm-hmm. too. Like, New York is fantastic when you're younger, because you kind of have the youthful blinders on, where, you know, you just kind of accept things as they are. You know, the streets and the noise and the crowded subways and the dirt and all that stuff can be really charming and cool and bohemian, and you know, you want to get in and live the artist's life, which is cool for a bit, but then the older I got, I started learning that it's okay to say, you know what, I don't particularly like the noise, or I want open spaces. And that was actually a big thing for me, is to give up the idea that I wasn't going to live in New York anymore, because there's a, you know, it's sort of a badge of honor that you wear, that I've lived there or that I'm living there, you know, and you're in the middle of it, and it becomes part of your identity. And then when you decide to leave, there's a part of you that feels like you're giving up, or for me anyway, you know, that I couldn't handle it anymore. But I really came to I was really at a good point in my life where I had really made peace with, I've given my time here. I've gotten out of it what I wanted. I don't feel less for moving on with my life, you know, just moving on to a new chapter.
I love that. Thank you for being honest about that. You know, a number, including myself, a number of folks go through that. And I would imagine, you know, that's about choosing if you're going to maybe live in or leave LA, or get off tour, or you've been on a ship for 5 years, rocking those contracts, life shift, right? And what people's impressions are of legit or large or small. So thank you for being honest about that.
That also is over the last few years, as it's become more and more difficult and expensive to mount shows in New York, that regional theaters have really, I feel like, had a renaissance in being part of creating new works, and that it began to feel less like New York was the epicenter. And it felt like there was incredible work being done across the country. So feeling like you didn't make it, or you weren't important enough, or you didn't blah, 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 because you weren't in New York. If you got past that mindset, that you could be rocking an incredible career, working on incredible shows across, you know, in regional markets, that, you know, there's tons of stuff going on. New York is not the epicenter anymore. So if you can get over that mindset, I love talking to young students who already have that frame of mind, that are like, oh, I don't need to go to New York. I'm just fine. You know, mm-hmm. I think that's changing a whole lot, which is good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can, I mean, truly, you can find interesting, satisfying, invigorating, soul feeding stuff, you know, a number of places with a number mm-hmm. of folks on a number of different types of contracts.
Absolutely.
I have a last question for you. A last okay. theme.
Okay.
It does not involve cotton balls. And I know it's a little goofy, but I'm just a fan of asking this. Do you have advice, or have you received advice that you wouldn't mind sharing?
I don't know. Of all these questions, this one I feel most on the spot. I don't know. Maybe it's like the tell me a time when you've had to solve a difficult problem question. You
know? So I just
you did.
Did I just do it?
you okay, just great. Did. Well, Susan.
Bob, could you just let me know three strengths and three weaknesses? And then how can I tell if you're stressed?
Well, Karen, I eat cotton balls when I'm stressed. And
for 7 minutes, though, because the body could process 7 minutes. hey, would you like a pass? Meaning, would you like a save? You ready?
Yes.
I think you already kind of gave it. I'm going to choose, although I've loved this entire experience of chatting with you, the nugget of wisdom that I think is worth repeating is about the notion of the spirit and power of I don't know. That's lingering for me, and I appreciate that reminder.
Yeah, that's a good one. And you know, again, to be serious about it, it's not always necessarily advice that somebody sits you down and says, let me give you some good advice here, kid. Come sit on my lap, you know? Mm-hmm. It's just that stuff that you just absorb by watching and observing and stuff. So that's why it doesn't stick out for me, is nobody sat me down and said, oh, this is how you should do it, or this is how things go. It's just stuff you learn along the way that you sort of naturally incorporate into your everyday life, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. You got to pay attention for sure. Mm-hmm. And you and I have similar paths on how we got to a number of our tasks and professions and titles we've held. Mm-hmm. It can be a little bit trial by fire and a little bit, I think I can do that. Will you give me an opportunity, or I'll come watch you do that and support this? And can I have a chance the next time?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, friend, for your time. I appreciate you.
Yes, I appreciate you too. You are a fantastic human being.
Thank you. I feel the same about you. I'm going to press stop.